Hey, what's up, everyone? This is the Dot Daddy Podcast, and I am here with Chloe Hayworth from Micro Artistry out in England. And today is November 8th, 2024. What's up, Chloe?
Hi, Joey. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to get you on. And like I was talking offline, I'm sorry we weren't able to do an in-person interview. It was just chaos at Meeting the Minds, but I am happy I got to meet you there. And how'd you like it at Meeting the Minds, by the way? How'd you like New York? Was that your first time?
It was my first time in America. And obviously my first time in New York. So it was an amazing experience to have my first American experience in New York. It's always been on my bucket list to go there. So I loved it. I really did love it. I mean, a week broke me. Just all the walking. It was such a busy week, but it was amazing. I'd love to go back, actually.
And were you by yourself while you were there? Did anyone come with you and wait in the hotel room while, you know, during the event? Or were you just sightseeing by yourself? Or what did you do?
No, I came by myself. So I came, obviously, for the Meeting of Minds. That was the main reason I was coming. But on the other days, yeah, I was doing lots of sightseeing, loads of walking around. It was amazing. But yeah, the Meeting of Minds was brilliant. And that was my first full Meeting of Minds. So I did go to the one in Manchester, obviously with it being in the UK last year. But I just went for a day. So I just went to like one of the specific courses that were running. But I really this year wanted to make the effort to go to the full thing and to see New York at the same time. So it worked out perfectly.
Yeah, I would have did the same thing if I was you, flying all the way over from England. I would want to stay for a week as well. It's a 7-hour flight?
Yeah, it was about 7 hours on the way out. But on the way back, it was like five and a half. So it was quite quick on the way back.
That's great. And so what did you think of New York? Just curious, you know, someone coming from, I don't know how often you go to London or the cities over there, but what you think of New York?
Yeah, so I'm quite in the countryside where I live. So it's the classic, you know, lots of fields, lots of greenery. It's quite common to get stuck behind a tractor on the way to work. Like I'm fully out in the countryside. So although, you know, I do experience the city and we have Bristol is the closest one to us. London's about 2-3 hours from me. Okay. But I've never experienced anything like New York before. But weirdly, I felt so comfortable. And I think I do like that lifestyle. I think maybe it's one of my regrets. I kind of wish I always did live in a city environment, even just for a while, just to experience it. But I think the way New York is laid out, it's so hard to get lost. Like it's so simple to get around, isn't it? The way it's like done in the blocks and the avenues and
with the numbers. Yeah, you just got to know the number and what avenue.
Yeah,
and you can pretty much generally get to the general location and then just kind of wander around. Where's my sign? Where am I going?
It's like on Google Maps, I was just counting the blocks I had to walk. I was like, okay, so after 5 blocks, I turn left, then I walk up 4 more blocks. And like I just wasn't getting lost because normally my sense of direction isn't brilliant. But I just felt like a bit of a local, really. And the first few days I was thinking, yeah, I could get used to this. Like maybe this is something I could, you know, live in this kind of environment for a while. But I think after the week, I was quite exhausted.
I agree.
Yeah.
I was there for 4 days. I got there Wednesday and left Saturday morning, like Saturday afternoon. And I'm exhausted. And I took the train. Yeah. I'm in Delaware and it's a 2-hour train ride up there. So I'm about 40 minutes from Philadelphia. And I like visiting New York, but I could never live there. Just too many people. Let me ask you this real quick, Chloe. Did you have any, see any chaos with the homeless people or anything? Did you see anything crazy?
I actually didn't. I mean, there's lots of craziness around. Someone gave me good advice. They said, don't look anyone in the eye and always look like you know where you're going. Yeah, just keep moving. So that's what I was doing the whole time. But when I got back, I was saying to everyone, I was like, there's a Starbucks and a Nutter like on every corner in New York. It's like, you can't escape coffee. and
pizza, and they have pizza every 100 feet.
Yeah, and pizza, lots of pizza. Yeah, the food was good, actually. The food was really good. But yeah, I didn't actually witness anything. So I was quite lucky. I felt really safe, actually. I felt really safe, like even walking around like in the evening and all.
There's a lot of cops, especially in Times Square. They have like excessive amount of cops.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of people around, so.
That's great. I'm glad you had a good time. You know, it'd suck you fly all the way out here and something crazy happens. Because I've heard from a few other people who had, I'll say, different experiences. Now, did you actually stay in the hotel, or did you go to, did you stay like close by?
Yeah, I stayed in a hotel on Fifth Avenue. It was called U Hotel. It was really nice, actually. I think I was leaving as long as I could, because obviously New York's very expensive. So I was trying to be clever. I was like, maybe I'll get a last minute deal. It didn't quite work out that way. But it was a really good hotel. It was only like a 20-minute walk to Times Square. So it was really easy to get everywhere. It was perfect. It was right by the Empire State Building, actually.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, it's that kind of location. Were you sort of in Times Square, or were you?
Kira and I stayed at a different hotel on Wednesday night than Thursday. So Wednesday we got there, then we went to the thing at Scout Micro USA. I went, Kira stayed at the hotel. She had a different room than me. Just want to put that out there for people. We stayed in two different rooms. That wouldn't be professional. And then the morning of, we took a taxi at, I think it was like 6:40 in the morning from that hotel to the actual venue. And then that's where we checked in, and we stayed there for the next two nights for Thursday.
In the addition.
Yeah, but the only reason I stayed in there was because Team Micro paid for it. Because we were doing all the videography. So they covered my room and Kira's room, but that, otherwise, you know, it's a little expensive. It's a little expensive.
Yeah, it looked like.
I think it was anywhere from $500 to $800 a night, something like that.
Yeah, that is a lot. I think I ended up paying like $1,500 in total. So I did okay. I did all right.
For the whole week?
It was a really nice hotel. For the whole week, yeah.
That's actually a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it was good. And that's taxes and everything. So everyone's telling me, oh, you're going to get caught out on the taxes. I was thinking, what taxes? What? I don't know what that is. But luckily, it was like all included.
That's great. So let's get into it, Chloe. So I saw on your IG, you do laser hair removal as well as SMP. How'd you get into that?
I do. The whole journey of like how I've got here has been so random in a way, but I've just recently started offering the laser hair removal, just because it's something a bit more mainstream and something that everyone has heard of before. So obviously, as you know, like with the SMP, it's something, you know, it's quite often people haven't heard of it if you tell people what you do. I saw your reel. You explained it so well, you know, like when you tell people what you do, everyone's like, what's that, you know? So I kind of just wanted to offer something that was still along the lines of hair, because that's my speciality, like hair loss, just all things hair, really. The laser just felt like a good move, and it's been going really well. So I've only just really started offering that, so it's quite new. But I'm excited to kind of expand out into different hair treatments.
Okay. And I saw your office. It looks really good, nice and clean. It looks like a medical facility. Did you set that all up, or how did that happen?
Yeah, I'm quite OCD with my cleaning. I do like to keep it really clean. And it was
there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I do like having it like very clinical. Just it's quite simple. People say sometimes they feel like they're going to the dentist, which maybe isn't the best thing. I might need to make it a little bit more like fluffy and homely. But yeah, it's a really lovely room, like so much space, so much light. But I did it all myself. Like when I first went there, it was actually like a construction person was working from there. and had all his equipment in the room. So it was a mess, basically. He painted two of the walls bright green for some reason, like the most awful green colour. So I had to basically just start again in the room itself. So like new floor, put the sink in, white walls, everything brand new. But yeah, the rest of the unit is lovely. Like I've got a kitchen, bathroom, like it's all private, nice reception area. So I've been really lucky with the room that I work from.
Yeah, yeah, it looks great. And I'd rather go to a place that feels like a dentist than to go to a dirty, nasty place, you know. So I don't think yours looks like a dentist, in my opinion. It just looks like really nice and clean. I love the color. I love the white and the grays.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, keep it nice and neutral. I think with this whole business, like you can go one of two ways, can't you? I think you can either go the kind of barber, like tattoo route, and maybe be a bit more laid back with like what you're wearing, like have more of a brand and a style, and be a bit more like quirky and stuff with your decor. And or you can go the clinical route, and for me that just always felt more suited to me. I think I like wearing my scrubs, I like keeping it all quite clinical and clean, so yeah, that just really worked for me.
I agree, and people are paying a lot of money, you know, for this treatment. Uh-huh. So you want, if it looks nice and you look good and you look professional, they're more likely to book with you.
Yeah, definitely. Not feeling like they're going to a tattoo parlor, they're going to like a clinic.
Agreed. Now, where did you grow up?
So I grew up, so for the anyone who's in the UK and knows the UK, it's a village near Bristol, I guess. So the village I grew up in is called Brent Knoll, and it's basically a village of like 3,000 people.
Wow.
Built around this hill. It's like just a hill, or a knoll, I guess is the technical name for it. So yeah, very, very much like a quaint upbringing, I guess. On the coast, so I'm in the southwest of England, so we have like all the beaches nearby, have Weston-super-Mare, Burnham-on-Sea, which is where I live now. So yeah, in the countryside, near the seaside. It's really nice. It's really nice around here.
And that's where you grew up as a kid, and then as an adult you lived there as well?
Yeah, so I haven't gone very far. I've done traveling in bits, but in terms of living, I've always lived nearby. I've wanted to stay near like my sister, and she's got a little boy now, so near my nephew, my grandma. So yeah, I've kind of wanted to stay near family. And to be honest, I do really like this part of the world. I guess it's easier to call it Somerset. I live in Somerset, basically. And I just really like this whole area. So I've never really moved away, but I do like it.
Good. And were you a good kid or were you a bad kid, Chloe?
So when I was in school, I was quite quiet. Like I was definitely like more of the shy one. But I always had this inner rebellious side, I think. I've not liked being told what to do. I think that's why I've done so well working for myself, because I do make a terrible employee. Like I've never been fired from a job, but I've had lots of jobs and I've always said I wouldn't employ me because I'm just too independent. Like I don't like being given orders, basically. So although I was a good child as far as I was quiet, I was pretty well behaved. You know, I wasn't like the class clown. I was really quiet. People probably wouldn't even remember me from school. I was one of those kids. But my
just kept
my
to yourself.
Yeah, I just kept to myself, really. But my mum was so good with me. Like she was so chilled. So I think if I'd had quite a strict upbringing, there's a chance I maybe could have been a bit more rebellious. But because my mum was so laid back, it was like a reverse psychology. And I almost like gave myself rules and things to go by, because it was just so relaxed, my upbringing.
That's good. And when did you graduate high school?
So in the UK, we leave school at like 16, and then you can go on to do... Yeah, so school finishes at 16, and then you can go on to the college, or you can do A-levels, so you can stay at your school and do like further education there. And then some people can leave at 16 if they want and go and get a job if you want, or like an apprenticeship or something.
Wait, so do you have 12 grades?
No, we have like year groups, so it goes up to year 11, I believe. I think it goes up to year 11 when you're 16, and then you can leave school and go to college, or you can stay on at your school and do A-levels, which is year 12 and 13. I think I've got that right. I can't believe how long ago it was already. That I can't remember. I think that's right. So I did A-levels in the end. Yeah.
And A-level meaning that you stayed till you're 18?
That's right. Yeah, so you stay till you're 18. And you normally choose like four options. So I did business studies, art, product design, and psychology. I thought psychology would be really interesting, but it was really boring. It was just all like the theory side of it, and like how they did the experiments. And so I wanted to like get to the more nitty gritty and, you know, what makes a murderer, what I thought it was going to be more like that. It wasn't like that again at all. I think I failed that miserably the first year. So what you can do, you do four A-levels the first year, and then you can pick three for the second and like continue them on, and the ones you like you can carry on. There were some super clever people who did five, but you know, that wasn't
now
me.
Is college in the UK, is it free, is it included, or how does that work? Like
college is free. So A levels and college are free, and then obviously when you're 18 you could then go on to uni, university, so which would be, well, yeah, however many years the course is for that, but that you have to pay for that. And the year that I would have gone to uni, it would have actually, it went up the fees. So it was actually 9,000 a year, which is why I didn't go, because there wasn't anything that I wanted to do enough.
Okay. So let me just make sure I understand, Chloe. So you're saying you go to school till you're 16, and then you have the option to either leave school and then you're done. You get a diploma or whatever. And then after that, you have two more years you can go, and you're calling it A school. And that is where you can pick like some type of specialty or something like that.
Yeah. So you do your GCSEs and like when you're 16. So you can do like up to like 11, I think, GCSEs. Mm-hmm. Then it's A levels. If you stay at school, it's called A levels, and you can choose like four options or up to five options.
Okay.
That you know, the classes that you go to.
Sorry, you know, now that you're saying this, Paul Clark was telling me about how he started doing drawing, and I was so confused. Now that makes more sense. It makes so much more sense. I wasn't sure how that all occurred. Okay, it makes more sense now. I didn't realize that you guys were done at 16.
Yeah, I don't understand how it works for you guys, really. Like, so do you not finish at 16 then, or do you just keep going? Or
no, so what it's, you start, there's 13 levels. So you have kindergarten, that's, I guess, okay, so you could call that level zero. Okay. And then, you have grade one through 12. So you go from every year, you go to a new grade one, two, and most people finish when they're either 17 or 18 years old. you could, but once you're done the 12th grade, then you graduate from high school, you get a diploma, and then that's when you either go to college or military or whatever, go into the job field. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So what did you do? Did you go?
I went to the Navy. I graduated and then went to the Navy. Yeah. So Chloe, you were a shy kid. Now, did you play any sports in high school? Were you on any, I mean, if you're in a town of like 3,000 people or something, was it just one school? Did you guys have soccer teams? Did you have cheerleading? Did they have that sort of thing?
Oh God, no, none of that. So yeah, it was like one primary school in the village that I grew up in. And then you go on to like the secondary school. But no, I wasn't particularly sporty. I think I've always been very arty. So I've drawn like my whole life. In school, pretty much all I would do is sketch and draw and copy. Like I'd copy pictures from like books or copy people, you know, make them sit for me and draw my family members. Like I was just obsessed with drawing people and copying things. So a lot of my childhood, to be honest, was spent drawing. And
so you're like a real artist.
Yeah, I've tried to keep it up my whole life, and I do still paint portraits now. I've done quite a few commissions, like pet portraits and family portraits and things. So I've always loved drawing. I did it a lot more as a child. I must admit, it kind of dwindled a little bit as I got older. I think you kind of lose confidence with it as you get older. When you're a child, you just do it because you enjoy it. And you're not thinking about, is it good? Is it, you know, I always used to get told they were good, but you never did it for that. You kind of just did it because I loved drawing. Whereas when you get older, you start being quite self-critical, and it almost feels like a pressure. It's like, oh, I should draw. I need to draw because it's something I can do. You feel like you should do it. And it's something I'd like to do more of now.
And you start comparing yourself to others, right? You start comparing yourself to other people's work.
It's a comparison, even like comparing yourself to the last portrait you did, because you think, well, the next one needs to be better. It's like, I need to keep improving. So you always like psych yourself up. I only do about one a year now because it's too stressful.
Really?
And
you do illustrations?
Yeah, I do illustrations. So I'll still do like sketches and things, like, you know, just as like a pastime. But to be honest, I still just don't do it enough. I'd love to do it more. I did do a life drawing class, which I really enjoyed at like the local college. That was interesting. But then they've stopped doing them now. But, you know, if there was more things like that locally, I would do them. I'd love to do stuff like that more often because it forces you. It's like a time of the week where you go and you do it.
Yeah. Yep. And you're around other people who like it, right? Who have passion about drawing. Exactly. And that sort of, but you said you paint as well. You're a painter.
Yeah. So I mainly just do painting now, actually. So I use like acrylics and things.
Focal point.
Pardon?
I said focal point just because I took some painting classes as well. I just learned random things, but I enjoyed it.
Did you? Was it like landscape?
I did what you were saying. I did watercolor, right? That's a thing. That's a watercolor. And
hard to use, really. Yeah.
And I think we did the acrylics as well. I wouldn't say I was good. I did enjoy it. We did a lot of trees, you know, drawing the trees and the brush strokes and mixing colors.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. I find it fun. I did enjoy it. I just, you have to, for me, I'd have to have a place set up. Sometimes my son, we let him finger paint and not to make a mess. So we put newspaper all over the table, right? And then we let him, you know, finger paint all over. And so when he does that, if I'm home, I'll try it too, because it's just fun. I do enjoy it. You can be creative.
definitely. Yeah, I think I've always, even with my art and stuff, I've been like a bit of a perfectionist. So I'm kind of quite envious of people who can be a bit more expressive and, you know, they're just like really loose with their brush strokes and they'll be quite experimental and they'll just kind of, you know, see how it goes, start and not know what's happening. Whereas I have to be quite regimented with it and I'll draw it out first and it's all very neat and very like precise. So although I feel like I'm artistic, I don't think I never think of myself as like an artist because I just don't have that kind of expressive side of it. I do everything quite like as realistic as possible. And I'm kind of envious of people who can do that more abstract art. Like that's what I really like. That's the style that I actually like.
So you're saying you pretty much, you see it and then you draw it, but you can't, you're not, you don't think you're good at adding your own little twist or using your imagination when you're creating the art. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely. So I love it when I'm, you know, copying something or, yeah, working from like an object or something that's in front of me. So say like if you said draw a tree or like paint a tree, from my imagination, I'd actually really struggle with that. But if you had something in front of me and I could copy it, I could copy it pretty close. Like I could get it quite realistic. But I do struggle with kind of just coming up with something in my mind and drawing it. Like I think that's so clever when people can do that. And with like tattoo artists, when someone goes in and they say, oh, you know, I want this, whatever, like this image, and the tattoo artist can literally draw it and create it on a stencil and then put that on someone's body. Like I think that's so clever. And to me, that's almost like a true artist. Whereas I'd say I'm artistic, but it's more just from copying. Like I would really struggle if someone came into me and was like, yeah, create this image in my mind for me. I would really struggle with that.
I think you probably could do it. You just probably have a little bit of a fear of, you know, is this going to look good? Do you think that's maybe any of it?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is like a fear thing. It's stupid, really, because it's, you know, what's the worst that can happen, especially if you're just drawing for yourself. You know, it doesn't matter, does it, what it looks like. But I probably just need to get myself back into it a bit more and just go back to more what I did when I was younger and draw for the enjoyment, because I actually couldn't wait to do it. That's all I did all day, every day, just drawing.
And just draw from imagination. Don't look at anything and just keep going.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's a good point. Like I definitely just need to be a bit less fearful of going wrong. It's the doing it wrong, definitely.
What kind of work did you do before you got into scalp micropigmentation?
So I've had so many jobs. Like it's a bit of a running joke with my friends and family. They're always like, what are you doing now? What job do you have now? Because I just had so many jobs growing up. I actually got my first job when I was 13, and it was in a cafe, and I was just washing up and like serving tables. And my mum didn't actually want me to have a job. She was like, I'll just give you some pocket money or something. Like, I don't want you working. But even from a really young age, I wanted to have a job for some reason. It's just always been quite like important to me to be working, and I actually do enjoy work. So all through school, like I had different cafe jobs, or I worked in a hotel for 5 years. That's actually probably the longest job I've ever had, working at this hotel.
5 years is 5 years. I mean, you're only 31. What did you do at the hotel?
I started when I was 14. So I was at the cafe for like a year, started at the hotel when I was 14 until I was like 19. And that was a mixture of like serving tables. It was a bit of everything, really. I did the washing up. I used to clean rooms sometimes. Yeah, they had a lot of like events. It was a really nice hotel actually, and it was in the village where I grew up. So they had like weddings and like birthdays, just like lots of different events going on. So it's a really nice place to work. Like there was always something quite interesting happening.
And when you're 14, you probably had four. So you worked up to like you're 19 or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you probably had a lot of fun though, working at a hotel at Fort. I mean, you probably run around. You have access to a lot of things you wouldn't normally have access to, right?
Yeah. It was like looking back, I'm like, oh my God, I was 14. Like, what was I doing? Obviously, like they kept me kind of out in the kitchen, I guess, initially when I was younger. And then as I got a bit older, I thought I had more responsibilities and was doing more. But I really enjoyed it, and I met people there who I'm still friends with today. And it's actually like looking back, it was definitely like my favorite job after this one. Obviously, this is by far being my favorite. But yeah, out of all the jobs I've had, I really enjoyed it. I actually loved my time there. It was so nice. It was such a nice place to work.
No, it sounds fun. So what did you do after you were done at the hotel? Where did you go? What did you do?
After that, I worked for my uncle's company. So he has a local company, like a manufacturing company. I left school. I'd done my A-levels and everything, all done, finished. Didn't want to go to uni because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I would have done art, but then it's like, well, what am I going to do with an art degree when I'm spending $9,000 a year to get this degree? You know, unless you want to be like a doctor or a teacher or something, it didn't seem like any point of going. So
no, that's
I went
smart.
I mean, I guess I missed out on the uni experience. That's the only thing, but looking back, I don't regret it because I don't think I would have really have got a job from like the art degree.
I think I love that you said that because that's very realistic, because there's so many people who go to school for art degrees or like liberal arts or something like that, and then they get out and they're like, I don't know why I can't find a job. Unless you become a teacher and you do that too, it's like, it's very rare that artists make money, you know what I mean? It's unfortunately, you know, I'm not saying we like artists, right? But is it essential? It's not really an essential thing that we need. It's more of like a luxury, right?
Exactly. Like, it's not in high demand, is it? we can live without it if we really have to. I think, you know, the doctors and the nurses and things, they're in the high demand. And like, yeah, you definitely got to go to uni if you want to do something like that. But and be an artist, you know, like you say, I guess if you wanted to be an art teacher or art historian or something. But did you ever have a career advisor at school?
Yeah, yep. We had career advisors.
Because I feel like with them, if you said, oh, I enjoy art, their first thing is like, why don't you be an art teacher? You know, it's like, well, I don't want to be a teacher. Did you find yours useful or were they just a bit useless?
My school was chaos. My school was probably very different than your school. It was, my school probably had the same amount of people as you have in your town. At one, we had like 1,600. We had 1,600 people in my high school.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
My graduating class was almost 400 people. It's a lot smaller now, that high school, but yeah, it was chaos. I had career advisors, but I didn't take them serious. It was a lot different. I'll say it was a lot different. It was just, mine was, all I wanted to do was survive and graduate. That's all I cared about. To your point, I could see why the career advisor would suggest that, because they're in the school, right? They're like, well, I have a career as an artist or as a teacher. Yeah. Why not you, you know?
It's just, it's funny, like once you leave and you get yourself out there and you have all different experiences and different jobs and things, you know, like this is how I stumbled across the SNP because I tried so much. I had loads of sales jobs along the years. So I was an estate agent for a while. I have worked on the road. So like repping, basically, where you like go to, you have like a territory and you go to you visit customers. And I had one where I was selling pet food. So I was on the road, like selling pet food across the southwest of the UK. That was interesting.
Were you selling it in bulk or were you just selling like bags to people?
It was, so I would have to like visit pet shops and try sell
it. Okay, so you were selling it to bulk. You're selling it to pet stores.
Yeah.
So were you working for a distribution company, like the supplier, the, you know, the company that created the pet food? Were you working directly for them?
Yeah. So the company was called Hill's Pet Nutrition. And they basically, it was like a higher end dog food, I'll say that. But it was like literally carrying around sample bags with me and selling into like, a lot of the pet shops were really small though. So when you're selling in, it's not like they were buying hundreds and hundreds of bags, like you're just selling whatever they could take, really. It was all about education, you know, going around like telling them what the new stock is. I used to have to go to like lots of Pets at Homes and which is like a big pet shop chain here in the UK. And like check the displays and stuff. So it's a bit of like auditing and stuff as well. It was a random job. I actually quite enjoyed it in a way because I was out on the road by myself. I think the jobs that I've liked the least is where I've been in like an office environment. And like having to see the same people every day. That's what really drives me crazy. Really.
I understand. Now, yeah. Did they pay for all your travel when you were going around all these places selling the dog food or pet food?
Yeah, you get like a company car. It wasn't a very, you know, cool car. It was pretty bad. It was like this big estate because you had to fit in like all the pet food. I actually had another similar job where I had a company car working for Nestle with their confectionery. So I had loads of chocolate in my car, basically.
Oh, you worked for Nestle?
Yeah, I worked for Nestle for a while. I've worked for everyone. I worked for so many different companies. And I remember, like, in the summer, it was just a nightmare because all the chocolate would melt. So I just remember having to, like, lug all the chocolate in my house like every night keeping it under the stairs to try and keep it cool to stop it from melting, because if you lost the stock, like that would go against you. It almost like comes out of like your budget. So yeah, you had to like protect the chocolate with your life. So it was just a nightmare, honestly. It's such a nightmare. I remember I think I counted up how many jobs I've had in total with my sister, and it was something like 19.
19?
Yeah, honestly, it's really bad. But it's because I always found it really easy to get jobs, and I've never actually been fired from a job before. I've left all of them. But I just was never happy. And in that time as well, I guess like in a way, like what we were saying earlier, I'm quite fearful in some ways, but then in other ways I'm so fearless, like I don't care to leave a job. I'm not worried about it at all. I'm like, I'll find another one. So if I don't like something, I'm like, oh, I'll just leave it, I'll find something else. But yeah, I can't remember what I was saying now.
No, 19 jobs. I thought I had a lot of jobs. 19 jobs is quite a lot. So I imagine you worked at some of these places for like a week or maybe a month, and then you're just like, I hate this. Yeah. I'm leaving.
Yeah, some of them. I think the shortest one was like a week. Yeah.
Okay.
That was.
Did you ever work in the fast food or anything like that? Like a McDonald's?
No, never did fast food. It was just yeah, like cafes, restaurants. I worked for Costa for a little bit, which is like basically like Starbucks. We do have Starbucks okay. in the UK, but we have Costa, which is a big coffee job chain. So I worked for Costa for a while. Trying to think what else. I've had so many. A lot of them were like very much sales related.
Were you good at making the sales? I mean, did you have, were they high commissions?
Oh, well, I would always start quite well and then I'd get bored quite quickly. So I'd always start off okay. And then my boss would start annoying me, or I would just start thinking, oh, this is so boring. And then, yeah, just start getting worse. So, and then bail out. So I think I've always like had it in me to be quite good at sales, but I just lose interest too quickly if it's something that bores me.
So you leave, you do all these jobs, right? You had 19 jobs. And I'm happy that you were able to just get up and leave and try something else. It's better than being stuck there and being depressed, you know, and hating it and just not liking your life, right? So if you're able to do that, good for you. So what ultimately got you into scalp micropigmentation? Where did you see it? What happened?
So alongside like all the jobs I had, I've always had little businesses as sidelines like my whole life. And I've always wanted to have my own business and work for myself. Like I remember when I did business studies in school when I was like 15, I just always remember thinking, I want to work for myself. Like it just really, I remember the moment sort of almost deciding that, thinking I do not want to work for someone, I want to have my own thing. So I tried lots of different businesses throughout the years, all different things really. And it was actually my mum who first told me about micropigmentation. So she was looking at having an areola reconstruction done herself, and it's something that she'd never heard of. Like she was doing the research, had found out that you can have this tattoo, and told me about it. And she was like, oh, this is like perfect for you, like with your art and everything, like this is literally perfect, you'd be so good at it. And I remember doing the research at the time I was in my early 20s, and I looked into it, and you know, like the training's quite expensive, and it felt a bit daunting at the time. And I just thought, oh, I don't know, like it was even less known back then. This is obviously like 10 years ago, doing medical tattooing. And I just thought, you know, I've got to find the money to pay for the training, and I've got to find clients. Will I find clients? So it was always on my mind since then. But at the time, I just kind of did the research and almost talked myself out of it. And I just thought, oh, I don't know if I feel ready to do something like this at the moment. And then a few years go by. My mum actually sadly passed away
when I was
26. Thank you. And it was all a big shock. So she passed away, yeah, when I was like 26. And for some reason, like the months following her passing, it just kind of was popping in my head again. It was really weird because I hadn't thought about it that whole time, really. Like after I'd done that initial research and decided against it, I kind of didn't really think about it. And it just was like really like sort of in the front of my mind. And I was thinking, yeah, I think I want to look into doing that again. So I was working as an estate agent just before my mum passed away. And I actually had left my job to be at home with her, to look after her, because we weren't expecting her to pass. Like that was kind of like a shock. But I had left my job because we knew like, it would have been a long recovery if she'd been okay. So I kind of just wanted to stay with her. But after that happened, actually, then it was COVID. So it went straight from losing my mum, and literally like the next month was lockdown in the UK. So I didn't have a job. and all this had just happened. And I was thinking, oh my God, like, what do I do now? I'm trying to think when I first did the training. So initially, like, I was looking into the medical tattooing, like the medical micropigmentation, because that's what I was initially interested in and what my mum had told me about. So I was still, okay. I went back and I'm doing research into that again. But I was kind of told, you can't do the medical straight away because you need to have more experience. Like, it's not something that people go straight into. They usually have a few years experience doing like permanent makeup on the face or something. And then you can do the medical tattooing, because obviously it's so niche as well. Like, it's quite hard to find clients. So I was kind of getting pushed in a direction. People were saying, no, like, you need to pick something on the face first. So you need to do like eyebrows or lips or eyeliner before you can go and do the medical. So I was like, okay, that's fine. Out of all of those, by this point, I still didn't even really know about the scalp. So I actually initially did training for microblading. So it was like, it was an online type course that I was doing from home. Now I know, you know, looking back, I'm like, that wasn't a good idea.
Well, you're just trying to figure it out. You're just trying to say, hey, exactly. What, you know, what is this? You're learning about it, right?
Yeah. Just, you know, I was so clueless. I hadn't heard of any of it. Like, I didn't know the right way to do things. I had no idea. I did lots of research. So I was looking at lots of artists across the UK and I was kind of working backwards. So I was looking at their work thinking, oh, I like their results. And then, you know, getting in touch and saying, oh, who did you do your training with? So I was trying to work out, and there was a couple of places that kept getting mentioned. So I kind of like stuck with that training schools and just went for it, booked the microblading. But I remember when I was doing it and I just wasn't enjoying it at all. And I actually remember like writing in my book that I was doing the training with. I was like, this isn't it. And I just remember like feeling really disheartened because I was kind of putting like all my hopes into this. I thought, oh, this is something I'm going to hopefully be really good at because of my art and something I could really enjoy. And I was doing it and I was just like, oh, this isn't what I want to do. Like, this isn't for me at all. So yeah, I felt so disheartened after doing the eyebrows. And also it felt very like beauty based as well. I didn't want to go down that beauty route because I'd kind of done that in the past. I'd actually done training to do like massage and like holistic type therapies in the past. And I had another business back when I was like 19 called the Pamper Pod. And I would basically, it was like a pop-up massage thing. So I would go to like different venues and stuff that didn't have spa facilities and basically be like a pop-up spa facility. So I did that for like a year or so. That was one of my many businesses. I've had a lot.
Serial entrepreneur.
Well, yeah, I mean, how successful they were, I don't know.
but at least you're trying.
I did, yeah, so much. I think my advice to people who are like in their 20s, though, if anyone in their 20s watches, don't like worry about what you're going to do long term. I think your 20s is so important. Just like try things. Just see what you like. Because a lot of it, you know, even with all the jobs I had, at least I could say, well, I know what I don't like now. I know what I don't want to do. So even if it's like a limit, you know, process of elimination in that way. But yeah, like I have no regrets. Like, your 20s are just kind of working your life out, aren't they? Seeing what you want to do with your life. But so yeah, with the eyebrows, didn't want to do that. And so I looked back into it and that's when I like discovered the scalp, and I'd never heard of it before, like never even seen it before. And some of the first results I'd seen was Scalp Micro UK and Scalp Micro USA. So okay. I was like looking on their Instagram pages and things and seen the results. And I was like, this is so clever. Like, it just looked so good. And I just thought the results were amazing. And my mum was actually a hairdresser. So I've always had that interest in hair my whole life. And I did even think about, should I be a hairdresser myself? Like, for quite a while. It was something I thought about doing myself. But again, that didn't like quite feel right. Again, it felt like a bit going down the beauty route, I guess, which I didn't really want to do. But the hair's always like been such a strong interest for me. So when I saw that, I was like, this is perfect because it's the hair with my art. And I know it sounds stupid, but it's almost like, because I'd spoken to my mum about the micropigmentation, although she doesn't know about any of this, you know, because like she's passed since I've done all of this, I almost feel like I've had her approval for it all. Because I know like she wanted me to use my art. She told me about the micropigmentation, so I know she would approve of that. And she would have been really excited about the fact that I'm working with hair loss and like people's hair. She just would have loved that. So
it doesn't sound stupid at all, Chloe. You're right. You're exactly right.
She's been a big influence, like a huge influence on this whole thing, like all my decisions. And yeah, so I did the training with Finishing Touches in the UK.
That's who you did your first S&P training with?
That's how I did, yes. Okay. Yeah, so I did lots of research. That's the one that kept guiding me back to, and you know, kept
what's the name of the head person there?
Dawn Forshaw.
Dawn, okay.
Yeah, so she was brilliant. Like, I remember speaking to her initially, and she was like really supportive and really helpful and kind of just like guiding me through the whole thing. And yeah, so I just went for it. I remember I was out for a walk with the dog that I inherited from my mum, a little Chihuahua crossbred Yorkie. I remember being on, just like walking around the block, and getting a call from Dawn to say, you know, like to basically book me on because I had inquired and we were just trying to work out dates and stuff. And she called me to like secure the date and to take like my payment. I remember feeling like really, I think I put it on a credit card or something. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm sending all this money. Like, I hope it works out. And I was like, just kind of like on the floor with my purse, like on the middle of this walk, trying to pay for my training and getting it all booked in.
But it's expensive. It just always like,
pardon?
It's expensive. I paid with my training on a credit card as well.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, because it's like thousands of pounds, I guess a lot of people probably do. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I've never had an issue spending money. Like, that doesn't bother me at all. But it's always like still a little bit daunting. Like, oh my gosh. And because I've had all these business ideas before, it's like, is this going to be the one? Like, am I actually going to enjoy this? Am I going to grow this one, or am I going to get bored? Because boredom tends to be like the main thing for me. I'm like getting bored of things. But honestly, like that first day of training, it just felt so right. And I remember, you know, doing my first real person working on real skin, and it just felt so natural. I was like, yeah, this feels totally normal. This feels like what I should be doing. And it just came so naturally to me. And I remember the trainers being really pleased with like the work I was doing. And I think that really gave me a boost of confidence. And yeah, it just straight away, I thought, yeah, this is what I should be doing. This is like the right decision. And I was so happy because it was a totally different feeling than when I was trying to do the microblading. This like felt so right.
That's good. And you're helping people, right? So, and then you actually learned it in person, which is a big difference, right, than learning something online. Now, yeah. Being a female, and you have great hair, by the way. I mean, your hair is really long, oh, it's all luscious and everything. And I ask this to a lot of people who are in the industry with hair. Do you feel like Do you feel like there's any hesitancy with men specifically when they come to you for scalp micropigmentation treatment because, you know, you're a pretty girl, you got nice hair, you probably don't have SMP. As far as I can see, you don't have it. Do you feel like they're afraid to show you their bald head or not to go to you?
Yeah, I think that was my worry a bit because I thought, well, I've never actually experienced hair loss myself. So it's, although you can like sympathize, it's like hard to fully understand what it would feel like if you were losing your hair, like the, how traumatizing that would be. So I was a bit worried, like, because I haven't had that experience, would people want to come to me? But I think I just really pushed the fact that I'm coming from like an artistic background. And so the results that I'm going to be creating are hopefully going to be like as realistic as possible. And that's like my niche in a way. And the feedback that I had from a lot of people was they actually felt more comfortable coming to a female and talking about it. So, yeah, that was like from men and women, actually. So it was like a mixture. They kind of actually felt more comfortable talking to a female about it. And some of the response I've had is like they felt more trusting for me to do it because they thought I would possibly do like take more care of my results, which I don't think is true at all, but that's just like what I've been told. So luckily I haven't had any issues. Like the people who've obviously come to see me have actually almost preferred the fact that they're coming to see a girl as opposed to a guy. But I wonder, you know, I may have lost a lot of other clients because I'm a girl. I'll never know.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. I'm glad that you're getting that feedback. Let me ask you this now. Because you're a girl, and have you had any guys, basically, I'll get to the point, have you had any guys trying to hit on you, you know, that you're doing SMP on? And that's to the point where you felt uncomfortable, like you didn't want to finish the procedure?
Yeah, there's been a couple of situations where they're just, yeah, they'll try it on. They'll, you know, like make it awkward. And you're just like, why are you doing this? And it's always like, it always tends to be like towards the last session. So you like get to know them quite well. You think, oh yes, a nice person, nice guy. I'm like, oh, why did you do that?
And then they start, and then they try to ask you out or something like that.
Yeah, I've been, you know, like people have asked me out and stuff, but it's just like awkward, isn't it? Like when it's your client and you've been doing that work for them and things, you know, I've never
okay.
trying to avoid.
Now, was there any have you ever had anything? Obviously, it's awkward and everything, but have you had any issues where they're like, I don't want to say stalking, but they're persistent and you're like, yo, leave me alone. I was just doing your SMP. That's it.
Yeah. No, it's never got bad like that.
That's good.
Because obviously like, because you're working, well, I work by myself. So when I'm at work, I don't really have anyone there. So if anything, you know, if like I did get myself in like a bit of a situation, it's kind of like just me. So I do think I've been really lucky with the clients that I've had. You know, some of them have definitely like tried it on and asked me out and things, but it's never got to the point where it's been really weird or like they won't let up, like they won't stop asking or something. Like once I'm like, no, they'll just leave it. And I think as well, because it's also a bit awkward because if they want to come back...
Like you need another session, right?
Yeah, they might have another session, or they might want to have like a top up with me, and then they've just like ruined it. Then they won't be allowed to come back. So you know they've got to be careful that if they want to still have SMP with me, then you can't get too weird.
Yeah, that's good. I had a. Do you know who Katie Hubert is? Katie SMP in Canada.
Yeah.
So Kate, I did a podcast with Katie and we were talking and I loved what she said. She said She had similar issues, but she had some real creepers. She had to put her foot down and tell them that. Now, Katie, I'm sorry if you end up listening to this. I don't know verbatim, but she basically told them, don't do anything you wouldn't say to a man. Don't say that to me. You know, don't treat me any different than how you would treat a man. And she said, you know, when she does that, you know, guys, you know, stop, you know, in their tracks, and they just kept it very professional. And I really liked that.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. And that's such a good way to put it, actually, because it should just be, you know, you are just like an SMP artist, regardless if you're like a man or woman. So I guess why should you be hassled at work just because you're a girl?
Yeah, no, I agree. Know.
Maybe you've been hassled by women. I don't know. Do you?
No, I haven't had any issues.
You've been all right. Yeah. I do feel lucky with that. I do feel lucky. Like, all my clients are so lovely. Like, I really do mean that. 99% of my clients are just so nice, and I don't know if it's almost like because they're so thankful with what you're doing for them as well. You kind of get, like, I don't know if you feel the same, but you get a different kind of person coming to you, I think, because they're looking for genuine help. They're just so like honest with you and like open, and they're so thankful for the work that you do. And I think that's why I've always really enjoyed going into this industry, and because I don't feel like it's that beauty base, I think maybe I'd have more issues if it was, you know, like more of like a beauty treatment or just for like aesthetic purposes, I think, because it's almost got that medical side to it, and people
I agree
to you
and when you're
for help. Yeah.
And when you're spending, you know, hours one-on-one, I work one-on-one a lot as well. And when you're spending hours one-on-one, they really do open up to you, and you do hear some crazy stories. I'm sure you've heard some wild tales.
Yeah.
It's fun. I like hearing it.
Yeah, I love it. And it's like, people are just so open, and like, they will tell you their whole life story. And yeah, the stories that people have told me, I mean, I always say, like, between these four walls, like, nothing will leave. I'll just keep all this to myself. But people really open up. And like you say, it's because you spend hours and hours one-on-one with someone, so you get to know them really well. And my theory is, the way I work, like, they're on a couch and I'm behind them. I think it helps when they're not looking at you. So I think it's much easier to talk and things when you're not looking directly at someone. So I think, you know, they're just like looking at the ceiling or looking at the wall, and you're working behind them and you're still talking, but because they're not looking at you, they're just so much more open, and probably it probably doesn't feel so intense because, you know, you're still doing the treatment and it's,
you're not gazing, you know, in their eyes.
Exactly. I think if you were sat talking to someone about all these things, like, they wouldn't tell you half the stuff, but because they're not really looking at you, they're just like, yeah, just tell you everything.
That's such a good observation, because, you know, I've been doing this for 6.5 years, and most, now that you say that, and I've thought about this too, but since we're talking about it, you know, I definitely get the most information out of people when I'm working on the back of their head, right? So I'm working on the back of their head and they got their head down. Cause I go from, you know, sitting up chair, you know, a hydraulic chair, they're sitting up, but then I also do the back of the head. It's like a massage chair, you know, their arms are right here in the front.
Yeah.
And, but when their head's down, I'm working on that back of their head, man, I've heard some crazy shit, some crazy, crazy stuff. You know, I've heard some horrible things. I've heard some amazing things, but I've also just heard just crazy stuff, like, what the fuck is happening, you know? And it's like, how did you get yourself into that situation? Or like, but I've also, luckily, I have such a diverse clientele that I'm able to pick their brain. Like, if I'm working on a doctor or working on a lawyer, or I'm working on you know, people in the a biologist, I can ask them random questions about certain things for free, you know, which is great. It's very helpful. And just get their advice. And I've even contacted them later, and you know, they give me free information, which is very, very helpful.
Yeah, you meet such a diverse range of people, don't you? And like, they have all such different jobs and different lifestyles and backgrounds. And it's so interesting. Like, I feel like everyone has such an interesting story once you delve into their lives a bit. And I think the biggest thing I've learned is like, no one has a very normal life. Like, everyone has something weird happen in their life, or something, you know, like a bit tragic, or like, everyone's just got such an interesting background, really. And I really enjoy it. Like, I just ask questions the whole time, usually, when I'm doing my treatments. I don't know what it's like for you, but
no, that's why I kind of started my podcast. Is part of the reason, yeah, is because I found that exactly what you said. Everybody has a story. Some people's story is more interesting than others, but everybody has a story.
Everyone. And it's always like pretty out there and interesting. Like, no one's, I haven't really met anyone that's had a boring life yet. It's always been pretty, something's happened. Something weird's happened.
Agreed. How did you get, now I also saw on your profile, what is it called, trichologist? You do that too? What is that?
So that's more like the study of the hair and scalp. So I'll basically be able to help identify maybe why someone's losing their hair, or if they struggle with like hair growth, or they have scalp issues. So it kind of bridges the gap between hairdressers and dermatologists. So I'll have more of an in-depth understanding of the hair and scalp than like a hairdresser, but I won't be able to actually, treat them necessarily. It'd be more like a referral type situation if I feel like they need to see a dermatologist or something. But it's actually kind of more identifying maybe why they're losing their hair. And the reason I wanted to go into that is because I get lots of female clients coming to me for the SMP, which I wasn't expecting at all. Like, I was expecting to get loads of bold men, basically, but I was getting all these like female clients just finding me, which was great. Like, I love doing my ladies, but hair loss can be a lot more complex for women, and there's so many reasons, like maybe why they're losing their hair, like it's quite hormone related. It's just so many reasons. It gets so confusing. So I was just thinking, like, people who are coming in, it's giving them just a more in-depth and like personalized treatment, really, because SMP might not be the best solution for them. Maybe I can tell them, actually, you could regrow your hair if this changes, or that, you know, there's something else that you could do to kind of improve the hair loss, to maybe even work alongside the SMP. So it's just giving more of like an overall view of maybe why they're losing their hair to try and help them.
Okay, nice. That's good. I mean, the more information you know, I think the better. And if the person might, maybe, you know, SMP can be a different option later down the road if they try something else. That's good to know. Good for you for taking the time to learn all of that. And then I just had one more thing I want to ask. So I saw on your profile somebody does PRP treatment.
Yeah. So that's a friend of mine who's also called Chloe, just to like really confuse things in the clinic. But it's so, people get so confused. I like, we'll be talking to someone, they think they're talking to the other Chloe. I was like, we should have just called you something else when you came here, because it's just too confusing. No one understands. But yeah, she's a registered nurse, and I've known her since I was 14, actually. So we've been friends for a really long time. She works in A&E, in the A&E department in the local hospital. So she's really busy with that, but she trained to do the PRP because she had a child. So she wanted to do something that gave her more flexibility. And I was actually sending people away from my clinic. Like, I was recommending PRP for some people in specific situations, where it was more suitable for them. And I was actually like sending them away to have PRP elsewhere. And I was thinking, you know, I want to keep all these people in the clinic. So I suggested it to Chloe and I was like, oh, you should train in PRP. Like I could get you loads of clients and you can do them from the clinic. We can work together. So it's been amazing. Like she's been really busy with it. And she gets some amazing results. So it only really works in like quite specific situations, but the people she's been working on, she's had like some amazing hair growth results.
Wow. Wow. And I know that the PRP is good for, I know it works. It seems to work with people who got the transplants, right? They get the transplants, they get the PRP and then it grows. But some people, if it's been to, you know, a certain number of years, like I don't think if I did PRP, it would grow any of my hair back. You know, I'm 37 and I started losing my hair, started being real noticeable when I was about 23. It got a little thin when I was, you know, 20, but then it was, I just don't think, I think I'm too far gone. Right. But I think people who are just started losing it, or females or people with alopecia, I think it might work well with them. And obviously the hair transplants to grow those new hairs. But like me, I knew that it wouldn't work. But trust me, I did consider it. But that's good. You have a friend. So then you both kind of win, right? You get to send them over and you're helping your friend and the person gets the solution.
It's so nice. And like, I love it because it's using your body's own nutrients and like own supplies. It's nothing artificial. Like it's, I think it's so clever how it works. But yeah, like you're saying, it only works in specific situations. So if you've got like traction alopecia, so like from tight hairstyles and things, it works really well in that case. Like you're saying, after hair transplant surgery, it's really, really good to help, you know, boost the hair growth from the hair transplant surgery. But yeah, if it's like pattern hair loss, it's a bit tricky because obviously that's like a progressive thing. You can't stop it. So PRP could slow the process down if you catch it early enough, but then you'd have to literally do it for life to kind of maintain the results. Yeah. It's still just going to keep getting worse. So that's why SMP is like so amazing in that situation, because it's one of the few options, really. Like, did you ever look into having a hair transplant, or did you just?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. My level of hair loss, they would be able to give me a hairline. Like they could take the hair back here. They could put up here. They give me a hairline, but they would never, there's not enough hair on the back of my head to fill the top. So I would go from bald to looking balding, and then I have the scar. So I'm happy with having the, SMP, you know, but the good thing about SMP, anybody, if you're still listening to this, SMP, if they come out with a cure for hair loss, like a pill or an injection, it won't stop hair from growing over top. It won't prevent it, you know?
Yeah, like no risk to it really, but it does suit you because you got the beard and you got like the shaved head, like that's a look in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, I've created an army of balded beard guys.
Yeah. I know, it's a look. It's good. If you can, you know, if you can grow a good beard, I think it's quite nice to have the shaved head with that. But I've seen like so many failed hair transplants and so many people go to Turkey and it just looks really bad, or it hasn't taken, they've got big scars. And one guy, he actually had 6 hair transplants, all in the UK. And they were all FUT, so like the strip scar. But even that, he had 6 and he still didn't have a full head of hair. Like I went in and did density for him. But you just think, oh my God, he would have spent, I don't even want to know how
did
much.
You do it? Did like, you do his did you do that guy, the guy SMP with the, I worked on probably about 5 people with like 5 or 6 transplants and their head is so jacked up and I feel so bad for him. The scars are brutal. They're brutal. And I always have to do their entire head. I have to do the scars, the sides, the top. It's just, they're living, they're hiding under a hat. It's so bad.
What happens in America? Because everyone goes to Turkey in the UK for like a cheaper hair transplant.
Oh, a lot of people go to Turkey too. from here.
Oh, even they make in America.
They make it pretty cheap. They have, and they're actually, Turkey is building a facility in Mexico right over the border. Yeah, they're doing that too. They're trying to make it so it's even cheaper.
Really?
Because you know, in Turkey, they don't, most of the time the doctor's not doing all that. They'll have like one doctor and like five procedure rooms, and he's just bouncing back and forth. And it's the techs that are actually sitting there doing all the tedious work.
Yeah. I had a client, and he went to this barber's, and the guy there had a really dodgy hair transplant done. And he was talking to him about it. He was actually quite happy with the results, but like apparently they weren't very good. But he was talking to him about it, and this guy was from Turkey. So to him, the Turkey prices were actually still quite expensive. And he actually went to Iraq to have a transplant.
Shut the fuck up.
He paid £500. I don't know what that would be in dollars, like $800 or something. And he had like the whole hair transplant done in Iraq. And apparently it was just really awful. Like his hairline was like halfway down his forehead. But he was quite happy with it. So, you know, but to him, like the Turkey prices were a lot. So it just makes me laugh. I just think, where does it end? Where do people in Iraq go to have a hair transplant?
Yeah. Where do people, that's crazy. Where I didn't even think of that. Holy shit. Yeah. I guess that every country has some doctor who's like, you know what? I can fucking do this. I'll charge, you know?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
I didn't even think about that. Wow. All right, Chloe. So how can people find you, Chloe? If people want to come see Chloe, get their SMP, where can they find you? How can they get in touch with you? What's your website? What's your Instagram? Name all that, and we'll pop it on the screen.
So my website is microartistry.co.uk. And my Instagram is microartistry_UK. So you can find me there. I'm located in Weston-super-Mare in Somerset, UK. Got my clinic there. So yeah, easy to get in touch through all these ways.
And she'll make sure it looks good. I've seen her work. She's a great artist, people. Stay on, Chloe.
Very natural. Very natural. Very subtle. That's what I like.
Daddy. Yeah.